Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Dale and Keith Show.
Swinging a hard ground ball to short. Bogaerts has it. The Red Sox win it. Beat the Dodgers 4-2. They go up 2-0 in the 2018 World Series.
Dale Arnold.
I take a lot of pride in being able to evolve from pitch to pitch or day to day or game to game, whatever it is.
Rich Keith.
Do you know in 1916 the price of gasoline was 22 cents a gallon?
Dale and Keith. Middays.
Hey, Phyllis, don't forget your light. I won't
was like, you too,
light.
Karen.
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Lucy gets a guest shot in the open
Why
today.
Why not? Well, she's back. She's back in here.
Nice.
Getting more regular shifts. That's good. It's a good thing.
So last week I was worried about where we were going to put the Lego statue of Joe West.
Yeah.
Can we put it right next to the David Price statue?
I think we could. This guy, well, to balance things out, Dale, I was doing the math.
Joe West statue would be a little portlier.
Including last night's treat, but taller. Price is taller. Same amount of Legos. He's taller. Same amount of Legos. So to balance things out, I've done the math. Even counting last night, David Price will now win his next seven starts in the playoffs.
Probably
to
true.
Even things out, he'll be 9-9 in the playoffs by the time he ends his career.
Then he'd be Clayton Kershaw.
Then he would be Kershaw or what, Randy Johnson or Roger Clemens. There's a few examples of guys that struggled, and it got to the point where there were so many bad David Price starts that I will raise my hand. I was one of the guys that said he's not going to be able to do it. However, if he was able to get that first win, didn't a lot of us think, okay,
the dam's going to break.
Yeah, it's going to snowball, and then he's going to be able to get going. And then, so to see him last night, you know, think about even a month ago or right after that Yankee start. How about the Yankee start that he had where he won an inning and two thirds?
That was not so good.
He started
that was
a
suboptimal.
Game, was yanked out of the game in the second inning. Everybody was losing their minds. It was like, what a disaster this guy is. He's going to opt out. And then you just fast forward a couple of weeks, and he's winning a World Series game at Fenway Park. I never thought with these
not
eyes
only winning,
I would see that.
Not only winning, pitching great.
He looked great.
His last two outings, ALCS against Houston last night, He's looked like an ace.
And six innings in the playoffs is the new complete game.
That's the new nine.
That is the new complete game. You had six? Holy smokes, what a marathon,
Are
man.
You okay?
Wow. So he goes six innings, had the one trouble inning. And I will admit, the zone last night was all over the place. Not an excuse for either side.
He was getting squeezed, I thought.
But they both were, and then all of a sudden, then they weren't. And it was like, what the hell? Like it was not consistent. But he had the one trouble inning there in the fourth, but was able to come back out. And we were texting last night. I thought he could come out for the seventh. He only had 88 pitches, but
you know what? They're just saving some in case they need another start, but
or in case you need another
relief appearance.
Yeah, and so we get to Nathan
probably
Eovaldi,
but not tomorrow night.
I
but
doubt
maybe
it.
Saturday night,
game four. You could see him warming up, get a good lather going like he did against Houston. He could warm up for an hour and then see if he gets in the game. But yeah, he gets out of that inning. I wonder if he was told after the fifth, I wonder if they told him, hey, go get us one more inning. And then that way you don't want to say, all right, now get us another one. Like maybe that was just part of it. I think that happens with managers a lot, all the times with starters. But he was great. I mean, 88 pitches. He goes six innings, looked really good, was throwing hard, then turned it over to the bullpen, and those guys were even better.
They are nails.
Those guys. I never doubted Joe Kelly, Dale. That's one thing you can say about
me. Oh, no,
I never doubted
him.
I like Joe Kelly.
Same with your unwavering support for David Price.
Yeah, the first seven innings, I don't know how they did it.
So the last time the Los Angeles Dodgers in a playoff game were held to three or fewer hits was Don Larsen's complete game in 1956.
That was a good game.
Yeah, it was a good game.
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, no.
The Dodgers, by the way, are hitting 175 in this series, one extra base hit, and have scored six runs total.
You know what's unbelievable is David Price leaves the game, and Joe Kelly goes 1-2-3, Nathan Eovaldi 1-2-3, even Craig Kimbrell 1-2-3.
And by the way, that's back-to-back outings now for Kimbrell, where he looks like the Craig Kimbrel we've seen in the past.
Not only that, but Craig Kimbrel.
Eric Gagne gets a ring.
Yeah, oh yeah, give him one. Play, sure.
Sir,
if he saw him tipping pitches, then give it to him. Yeah, because Kimbrel looked great. You know, one of the things where even when he's going well, he'll occasionally walk a guy, and you're like, oh boy. But last night, he only threw 9 pitches, 7 for strikes.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, the Dodgers, for a close game, I mean, you know, they're sitting there. Dodgers have a 2-1 lead, but it still felt to me like, oh, the Red Sox are going to come back. They're gonna come back in this game. They're going to find a way. But halfway through the game, they scored first, which, of course, is a Keefe's key. You score first, you win.
Just
as simple as that.
Just to put it in perspective, yes, in the regular season, the Red Sox were 74-15 when they scored first. In the playoffs, they're now 8-0. 82-15 this year when they score first.
It is pretty silly.
It's like as soon as you see them score, you go, okay, we're done.
No, 9-0. I think it's 9-0.
I thought it was 8-0 after last night, but
well,
you might be right.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9, right? So all three times against the Yankees, they scored first and won. All four times against the Astros, and now 2 times here against the Dodgers.
Yep.
So it is pretty remarkable. And then so they score first. They end up giving up the lead, but then they come back. Obviously, J.D. Martinez with the 2 RBI single in the 5th inning. And that was it, you know, because Ryu looked decent at first, but then
he looked really good, I thought.
Yeah, he did. And then they were able to get to him. They were able to break through. But the price and bullpen performance, two things that going into the playoffs, there's no way you felt good about. Either one. I don't know if you felt worse about the bullpen or worse about Price.
And if you knew that Chris Sale was not going to be Chris Sale, you'd feel even worse about the Red Sox's chances.
Oh, you absolutely would. And it's crazy to think they have a 2-0 series lead. And they haven't even used their best starter yet as a starter. Now, they've used him in the pen. Nathan Eovaldi's been their best guy. Nathan Eovaldi has the deepest start in the playoffs. He had that 7-inning performance. He followed
up with a great
6-inning
performance.
Obviously,
he's not going tomorrow.
He's not.
It's got to be Porcello.
No, he's not, but he might finish the series
for
you.
But I could see him going Saturday night.
You know, 13 pitches. I think it was, 16 or 18 the night before. So it's not like he was overworked.
Well, no, that's what a bullpen, less than what a bullpen would be, right?
I think so.
It would be a little less stress on your body in a bullpen.
Right. I mean,
you're not torquing it up like he's doing.
Plus, he has to warm up and all that, or whatever else it is. But you give him today off, you give him tomorrow off, where Rick Porcello will go. And then I assume Eovaldi. And maybe you can't think 7, even 6 innings maybe is not as realistic. But still, you get him out on the mound. He has been almost unhittable in the playoffs, and they still have a 2-0 series lead. Chris Sale goes 4 innings. It doesn't look like Chris Sale. And then you have David Price, who now has put together back-to-back.
Now David Price looks like Chris Sale.
It's very confusing. It's hard to keep up with all of this stuff, but a 2-0 lead, and there's no chance they come back to Fenway. There's just zero chance. You think the Dodgers are going to win 2 games out there?
Going into this series, I said Red Sox in 6. You correctly probably picked Red Sox in 4.
Yep.
After what I've seen in the first 2, I can't imagine them coming back home.
No, I don't see it.
I can't imagine. By the way, the Red Sox haven't lost a road game in the playoffs this year. I can't imagine them dropping 2 out of 3 out there.
No, I don't see it either. And Rick Porcello hasn't been great. You know, he was probably better in the bullpen. Like he's looked pretty good there. But I think that Walker Buehler had a really good regular season. In the playoffs, he hasn't been all that sharp. And then where do they turn to? Rich Hill in Game 4. I mean,
by the way, Walker Buehler is not very good.
Well, he was good in the regular season.
But here are his three playoff performances, because everybody's talking about, ooh. Now, his last one was.
Not scared of Walker Buehler?
Walker Buehler.
Come on.
October 7th, pitched against Atlanta, went 5 innings, 2 hits, 5 earned runs. They lost the game.
Against Atlanta, right.
October 15th, NLCS against Milwaukee, went 7 innings, 6 hits, 4 earned runs, took the loss.
Right.
Then on October 20th against Milwaukee, 4 2/3 innings, 6 hits, 1 earned run. He didn't get the win, but they won the game.
Yeah, right.
In the playoffs so far this year, 16 2/3 innings, 14 hits, 10 earned runs, 5.40 ERA.
No, that is for sure not good. I mean, but the regular season, he had a 2.62 ERA. So he was good in the regular season. He has not been as sharp here in the playoffs. His most recent outing didn't go as deep, but it was his most effective one. But no, I think the Red Sox will hit him too. I mean, the way they're going, to get to Kershaw, to get to Ryu enough, I think they're definitely going to hit him. Now the question becomes, what does the lineup look like? What do you do? J.D. Martinez didn't look all that healthy running the bases yesterday.
No, but he hit the ball great again.
Hit it on the screws.
That huge hit when they took the lead for good. Thank you, Dave Roberts, as I tweeted last night. Thank you for taking him out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
And you know, I even understand the logic. The guy he brings in has been great all year long. In the playoffs, all five inherited runners that he's come in, that have been
O'Ryan
on...
Ryan Madsen?
All five guys that he's picked up have scored.
He's
now,
terrible.
His ERA is zero.
I guess
inherited runners have scored.
I guess it is. I love, too, when they bring him out, and every time Smoltz has been saying... You know, Ryan Madsen really likes to pitch from the windup. He does. He's not a big fan of pitching from the stretch. It's like, you're a reliever. You're going to be coming in with guys on base.
You're probably going to come in with somebody on.
You might want to be able to figure that out. But, yeah, he has been pretty bad. He whenever he comes in, you feel pretty good about that as a Red Sox fan. So their bullpen and then some of the decisions they made, too. Now, they probably would have brought Madsen in to face Martinez and Bogarts. But I also wonder if Steve Pierce, if that made him switch, because he has even more drastic splits, right? Like, he owns most lefties,
yep,
struggles against some righties. So I wonder if that's what really made him, because that's the first guy that Madsen faced was Pierce. So I wonder by having him at third.
Him.
Yeah, right.
Doesn't matter what his splits are. There's nothing near the plate.
Okay. Yeah, there was a couple of times, even, you know, in that fifth inning, you know, when Christian Vasquez, there was two outs. First of all, the inning could have been over, but Vasquez finds a way to reach base. And then that extends the inning. When he got to second base, there was runners on first and second with two outs. I thought that was an opportunity to pinch run, take Vasquez out, either put in Swihart or somebody else faster. Because if it's a little blue pit to the outfield,
yep,
do you think Vasquez is going to be able to tie the game? Now, ultimately, it doesn't matter. Next thing you know, he's on third base. Then he scores. It didn't matter at all. But I thought that was one where if they didn't, you would have looked at that and said, hey, maybe Cora do something. But everything he has done or not done has been the correct decision. So it's really hard to blame Cora for not doing it there.
I'm done questioning. He can put out any lineup he wants tomorrow night, and I'm not going to sit there and go, what?
Doesn't matter.
He can pinch hit for anybody under any circumstances. He knows stuff.
I think he does.
He maybe has been here before.
He seems to know it. He's got a pretty good grasp of what's going on, both pregame and in-game. All the decisions have come up right.
By the way, when the Red Sox do get to the World Series, they're a little tough to beat anyway, aren't they?
They usually win.
They don't even lose games.
No, they rarely lose games. Yeah, they go for the sweep. And so, I mean, that's what it seems like it's going to be. Now, I guess the question, are you still going with Mookie Betts at second base for game three?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, do I think they are? I think probably not. I think Bradley Jr. is probably going to take a seat.
Yeah, that's
They'll use him as pinch hitter later on in the game. They'll get him into the outfield at some point.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because we've always talked about the outfield defense for the Red Sox, which as a whole is really good.
Yeah.
Jackie Bradley Jr. is a great glove in center. Mookie's a gold glove in right. Benintendi's the weak sister, so to speak.
Right.
And then he's made a couple of catches here in the playoffs. The diving catch to clinch the Houston series.
That was still the best catch.
The Michael Jordan logo catch last night.
Yeah, that was a cool catch, but the catch against Houston, not that it was necessarily the most difficult catch in the world, but just with the stakes. I mean, what was on the line for that one?
Because if he misses it, they probably lose the game.
And so when he's your worst defensive outfielder, you know you're in a pretty good spot. And they've said it before, but the truth is they have three center fielders.
Yes. All of them can and have. In fact, Benintendi was always a center fielder. When he got to Portland is when they shifted him over to left.
Right.
Because they knew that if he was coming up to Boston,
you
know, Jackie's going to play center. So they shifted him to left when he got to the Sea Dogs.
Yeah, if any one of them were out, I mean, you go Bradley in center, you can go Betts in center, you can go Benintendi in center. So, you know, coming up tomorrow night, I mean, they'll probably put J.D. Martinez in left. I think they'll probably put Benintendi in center, right? And then Betts in right, keep him comfortable there.
I think they'll put Martinez in right. I think they'll move Mookie to center and leave Benintendi in left.
Yeah, they could do that. I got to check out the dimensions at Chavez Ravine, see if that makes the most sense. Yeah, because Martinez can play either side, so I guess whatever.
He's played more right than any place else. I think he'll be in right field tomorrow night. Mookie will move to center, leave Benintendi in left, and go from there.
And then it's a simple switch. And if they have the lead, maybe even in the seventh inning, if you feel like putting Jackie Bradley in from there. You don't want to lose too many at-bats from J.D. Martinez, obviously.
But I think your point about, you know, how hobbled Martinez is legit. He can still hit, obviously.
Yeah.
When he stumbled over second base there in game one, that did not look good at all.
Yeah, he went down. It looked like I thought his ankle was down. Then the trainer had to come out and see him, and you're like, oh, boy, like don't do this. But he was able to walk off and stay in the game. So you gotta keep his bat in there, especially the first couple of times through, whether it's Walker Buehler, Rich Hill, or whoever they're throwing out there. You got to keep his bat in. But, yeah, he probably won't finish all the games, but that's fine.
My favorite moment in last night's game, just because it was such a weird, strange moment.
Yes.
The throw from left field that went between Ian Kinsler's legs and got him at third base.
How are you going to do that?
How can that even be?
If
you gave the outfielder 100 balls out in a bag,
right,
and said, okay, we're going to see if we can do this, you'd never be able to pull that off.
That was very, very strange. I thought it was bad base running, but then at the same time, you're thinking
bad base running.
It was, right? It was bad base running, and Kinsler comes up with a big hit earlier, but then that was dumb to run into the out there. But also, part of it has been how aggressive they are. Like, they're a team,
right,
you know, most teams, a guy will stop at second, they go
this,
to third.
They've been doing this the entire playoff run.
And they ran into a lot of outs during the regular season. Not as many as last year, at least didn't feel that way. You know, they were a better team, but part of their overall approach, not just at the plate, but on the bases, is being aggressive. So, you know, I'm sure Cora still doesn't want you making that last out at third base, but at the same time, that's sort of given them an advantage here in the series. Actually, all playoffs long.
We are looking at, obviously, the best team in baseball. They've been that way all year long. They are the best team in the playoffs. Everybody kept trying to make a case for the Yankees being better than the Red Sox. That was not true. Then they tried to make a case for the Astros being better than the Red Sox. That was not true. Now, not that many people tried to make a case that the Dodgers are better.
No,
they had 92 wins.
It's kind of a letdown. It's like, you know, in the 90s when the Cowboys and the Niners would meet in the NFC Championship game. That was the Super Bowl.
Right.
Then they get to the Super Bowl and they just whack Stan Humphries and the Chargers or what. You're like, it doesn't matter. Like, you're like, this team sucks.
It's our
like,
first Stan Humphries mention in a while.
You don't get a lot of him, but this is sort of what that is. Like, Astros, Red Sox were the two best teams in baseball. And that series wasn't even as competitive as I thought it was going to be, certainly. I think most people. You look at 108 wins, 103 wins. You just look at the rosters, top to bottom, 1 through 25. One was the defending champ. One was the sort of the new team in town. That was the best matchup, and it only went five games. This is not that. You know, the Dodgers, if they were in the American League, maybe they don't even make the playoffs. Like, I understand what their record was, but if you put them in the American League and playing against American League teams, they may not even be in the playoffs. It's the best the National League has to offer, and the Red Sox are going to make very quick work of them.
Here are the teams, based on regular season.
Yeah.
Here are the teams who had more wins than the L.A. Dodgers this year.
Okay.
Obviously, the Red Sox, the Yankees.
Astros.
The Houston Astros, the Oakland Athletics, the Milwaukee Brewers, the Chicago Cubs. They had two more wins than the Tampa Bay Rays, for crying
right.
out loud.
But the thing about that, they didn't play the Red Sox in the regular season.
Right.
So, like, if they had to play 18 games against the Red Sox, 18 games against the Yankees, they're not winning 92 games. You know, if you take them out of the NL West, they're not that good. I mean, we've already, as Red Sox fans, seen them face two better lineups. I would probably argue two better rotations. I mean, especially because Clayton Kershaw. No, he's not. And in the playoffs, he's a little bit more mortal than he is in the regular season. And then after that, I'll take the Houston rotation and the New York rotation and the Cleveland rotation over the LA pitchers.
The whole two out scoring thing is getting weird now.
It's like they want two outs.
It is unbelievable. In the playoffs, with two outs and runners in scoring position this postseason, they're 17 for 40, hitting .425. With 11 walks and only 6 strikeouts.
Well, more of their runs come with 2 outs than...
Yeah, now it's more. It was like half.
It was 50-50, and then last night all 4 of their runs came with 2 outs. So it is... Think about that. And the sample size is growing, too. So it's not like, oh, they had a lucky game or even a lucky series or whatever it is. They've been consistent now throughout the entire playoffs. 2 outs. And you think about that. Again, you go back to the inning in the fifth. So the Red Sox are down 2-1. There's 2 outs, and Christian Vasquez is up. That should be a perfect spot for the Dodgers. They get out of that inning, they still
have
the lead.
That's what you're hoping you get.
They have the lead, and you know, maybe your starter, if you're LA, is still in the game. But he reaches base, then it turns over to the top of the lineup, and then the next thing you know, they're able to do damage. Like, whether it's Betts, Benintendi, Pierce, Martinez had the big hit, and that was it. But they should have been out of that inning. You know, if they're able to get Christian Vasquez, best matchup possible for the Dodgers, they can't do it, and then that's all the runs the Red Sox needed.
All right, let's get to the calls with you guys in just a couple of minutes. 617-779-7937. Text line is 37937. We'll talk to Peter King a little over an hour from now, as we do on Thursdays. We'll try to work in some football here and there.
Although, let's be honest, we want to talk about baseball.
Interest is not at a fever pitch for the big Monday night tilt against the Buffalo Bills.
It's a good Bills team.
No, it isn't.
It's not a Bills team.
It's from Buffalo.
It's the Buffalo team.
They're the team from Buffalo.
They're there.
617-779-7937. We get to your calls coming up next. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Now back to Dale and Keefe on WEEI.
The 1-1. Swinging a hard ground ball to short. Bogarts has it. Wings to first. The Red Sox win it. The Red Sox beat the Dodgers 4-2. They go up 2-0 in the 2018 World Series.
Two down, two to go. They head for the West Coast. Games 3, 4, and maybe 5.
There's not going to be a 5.
Friday,
please.
Saturday, and Sunday.
Please.
The Twitter site Red Sox Notes has got a great tweet that they put out a few minutes ago. If you look at the entirety of their year, the Red Sox have now played 207 games in the last 245 days. That includes 2 exhibition games against Northeastern and Boston College, 32 Grapefruit League games, the regular season, the playoffs. Their record in the calendar year 2018 is 141 wins, 65 losses, and 1 tie.
They're counting the Northeastern win.
they're just trying to show you the entire.
It's a winning club there.
A winning percentage of 681. If you just look at every game they played, what was the tie? I mean, there was a Grapefruit League game that was a tie.
I know they
went 22-9-1 in the Grapefruit League.
Oh, there it is.
So I mean,
called the game due to darkness.
No, called the game because we ran out of pitchers.
Like, that's it. We got to go home now.
So I mean, they have just been a wagon from the start.
Yeah.
Of spring training until today.
No, they absolutely have been. And they were on pace to, you know, smash the franchise record. There was, you know, by the end of the season, you know, the pace kind of cooled off a little bit, but still 108 wins. I mean, you had to go back forever to find a 100-win team. You know, and there had been multiple World Series winners, and they had all finished in the 90s. So to see them get to 108 and then the playoff run, what's even more impressive to me is they've only lost twice in the playoffs. You know, they lose one game to the Yankees. They lose the first game to the Astros and then win 4 straight there. Then they open up the World Series with 2 wins. I mean, it has just been, you know, you're not sweating out these, oh, it's a game 7. It's like, you know, we're freaking out, do or die. No, they've cruised this whole time.
617-779-7937. Let's dive into it with you. Steve's down in Miami. Steve, you're up first on Sports Radio's Dale and Keefe.
How are you guys?
Good. Hey, Steve.
Great. Before I get to my points, talking about Alex Cora, last night when he pinch hit and put Moreland in, with what happened with Nunez and all that, didn't you think that something magical was going to happen at that point? I know I did. I thought, okay, he's doing it again. He may not get a home run, but Moreland's going to do something. And that's how I'm starting to feel about every move that Cora does. I mean, there's been question marks sometimes, but it seems to always work out. So when Moreland came up, I thought, okay, this is good.
Yeah, he strikes out. But either way, they still won the game. So exactly.
No. I know he struck out, but just because of what happened with Nunez. And
of course.
With other things that Cora has done, the moves, I just thought, okay, this is going to be another one.
I hear you.
No, I know. I realize he struck out. The other thing, I don't know if you were watching the on Fox and the post.
That was the only play. Oh, the post game.
No, I missed it. What were they talking about?
There was a lot of yelling, by the way.
Yeah. Could you hear it better?
Barely.
Well, Frank, the big hurt, and he is big hurt.
Right.
Course, emphasis on big.
No, I got it.
Said that David Price is a future Hall of Famer. Now, I realize that there will probably never be another 300-game winner, so the standards are much lower.
Yes.
But I want to get your opinion. Is David Price, I mean, what do you
think?
He's not a Hall of Famer.
Not now.
He's not a Hall of Famer. How many more years do you think he has? He's 33. He's not a Hall of Famer. No, he's been a great pitcher. He has a Cy Young to his resume and 2 runner-up finishes.
And
that's three seasons.
Theoretically about to add a World Series title to his resume.
Yes. It'll be his first World Series. He has 143 wins as a starter. Isn't that amazing? Because
now his winning percentage is pretty good. 143 and 75.
Oh, it's very good. And his career ERA is 3.25. That's also very good. But think about that. Guys that would win 300 games, he's not even halfway there. And I do think of him as one of the better pitchers of the last decade. You know, you think of, you know, Justin Verlander and Clayton Kershaw and all these guys that stand out over the last 8 to 10 years. He is one of them. Again, with the Cy Young and two runner-ups, but no, he's not going to be a Hall of Famer.
Led the league in ERA twice. Had one 20-win season. Led the league with 20 wins 1 year.
Yep. That was the Cy Young year, right?
Yep. Yeah. Led the league in strikeouts once.
Five-time All-Star, like even that doesn't seem like it's
the All-Star
a huge
thing. Just doesn't seem like that big a deal to
really
many. I don't think the number is big enough to have it be a dramatic.
Oh, that is it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I thought you.
Yeah.
Meant
no.
It
no. No.
Matter
no.
At all.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
Five-time
no.
All-Star. It's
that's
like,
my
okay,
point.
Yeah.
I think that kind of sides on no. Like
right.
If he was like a 10-time All-Star, you're like, oh, that's hard to ignore. But yeah, 5-time All-Star. I think he is a very good pitcher in the regular season, and now these last two starts, he's starting to change things around postseason wise. But you know, if guys like, you know, Curt Schilling and Mike Mussina and those guys can't get in, I don't think David Price is getting in. We'll see. I mean, maybe he is somebody that has a great mid-30s run and continues, but that is pretty rare, especially for a guy that had some injury issues a year ago. I don't see him racking up four more really good seasons.
Bill is in Falmouth. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's going on?
Bill, lifelong Sox fan. And
nice.
Just having a little trouble with all the exuberation right now when we're only two games into the series. I remember...
Should we be depressed?
Yeah, they are up 2-0, right, Bill?
No, I'm not trying to be depressed, but these are the Red Sox, and you never know how it's going to happen, but things can happen.
You know that, Bill, I don't know if you know this, Bill, but that narrative changed a few years
Bill,
ago.
Yeah, these are the Red Sox. They don't lose World Series. Once they get into the World Series, they don't lose the series, and they rarely lose games.
I know. You guys are right, and I don't know how it's going to happen, but dissing Curt Schilling last night just gives me a bad feeling.
Ooh, the curse of Curt Schilling. Curse. I didn't think of that, curse. Bill.
I somehow doubt that that's going to have much of an effect. Well, people who think that that's going to have an effect are the same ones who think that if you say the series is over, if you say
don't do it.
You'll somehow curse them.
Jinx, what did you think of them not having Curt Schilling out there for
the
0-4
squad? I said last
squad?
Night on Twitter, it's a bad look for the Red Sox. He lives 16 miles away or whatever the number is.
Yes.
It would have been a very easy thing. Now, based on what he wrote today, my guess is he might not have shown up.
It sounds – well, I don't know.
It's easy to say in the aftermath.
I
didn't want me there? Well, I wouldn't go.
Yeah, I didn't want to go. I'm not fired. I quit.
No, they should have. They should have included him.
They absolutely should have included
nothing
him.
Nothing against Alan Embry or –
Alan Embry?
Please.
Alan Embry?
No, my point is I'm not trying to knock anybody.
The fireballing southpaw in the bullpen. Welcome back, Alan Embry.
Yeah! Alan Embry's back!
You've been waiting to wear your
Alan
Embry jersey,
huh? Thank you, Alan! So they bring Veritek, Wakefield, Kevin Millar, Alan Embry, Keith Foulke, Pedro Martinez, David Ortiz. When you think of the 2004 Red Sox, if I could give... You can pick five guys off the team.
Okay. Ortiz, one.
Okay.
Schilling, two.
You don't even have to rank them, but
no.
Okay. Ortiz, Schilling.
Ortiz, yeah. Schilling, Pedro.
Manny Ramirez. Pedro, Foulke, Manny Ramirez.
Yeah.
That's the five in some order. You have three. You have the two starters, a closer, and the two best hitters on the team. Kevin Millar was a great personality.
I don't think they're going to bring Manny back.
Manny! All this outcry for Schilling. Give me Manny. Who was the MVP of the World Series?
Yeah, but
Manny freaking Ramirez
But Manny
was.
Doesn't live 16 miles away either.
Oh, you could have called him. You knew Game 2 of the World Series was going to happen. You could have gave him a buzz. I would have invited Manny. Manny should have been the only guy throwing out the first pitch. He was the MVP of the World Series. Manny Ramirez. We're bringing Veritek, Wakefield, Millar, and Embry over Manny Ramirez. That's more. Curt Schilling... You should be just as upset with. Curt Schilling should be out there, but so should Manny Ramirez.
The happy and hilarious first baseman who drew
Forgot
the
him.
That led to the steal.
I had him on there.
Welcome back, Kevin Millar.
Now, it was easy because, well, he was here. He was working for MLB.
I like Millar. I'm just saying he wouldn't be on my top five, but you're allowed to bring more than five. If Pokey Reese was around, come on out there.
I mean, it almost, and the way the Red Sox explained it to Alex Reamer, which, by the way, I don't believe. We were only originally going to start with Pedro and David Ortiz, and then it kind of, you know, other guys said they were going to be here. Okay, Tim lives here. Tim Wakefield lives here.
Yeah.
Veritek is a coach for the team. He's all around all the time, so he was probably
okay.
Here. Kevin Millar is here because he's working for MLB
sure.
Network.
Okay. Where's
Keith Folk and Alan Embry just happened to be driving through Boston last night?
The reliever who closed out the sweep in St. Louis. Welcome back, Keith Folk.
Got no issues with him being there. But my point is,
you think Mike Timlin shed a tear seeing those guys out there?
God.
He's like, why couldn't I?
Hey, why not?
Please. Yeah, no, I bring as many guys as you want. Like, I'm not saying get rid of some. I'm just saying Manny Ramirez and Curt Schilling are two of the first three or four names I think of when you talk about the 2004 playoff run. Actually, well, Keith Folk, I thought, might have been their most important player of all the series
combined.
I thought
he should have been the MVP of the entire playoff run.
Yeah, which isn't a thing, but we've made it a thing.
Because we've already given that to Nathan Eovaldi.
Nathan
Eovaldi's
the guy. He already has that, and he's continuing to earn that. But yeah, that was bizarre. I mean, you got to at least invite Curt Schilling. And I understand what comes with Curt Schilling, but you don't have to give him a microphone. You don't have to. He's not going to go on the mound of campaign. He's not going to say, oh, media members should be dead or whatever he was doing
now,
before.
I don't think he would do that. Where I do disagree with Jerry a little bit here.
Okay.
I heard Jerry this morning say, you know, they wouldn't have gotten any reaction. You know, it wouldn't have mattered. Nobody would have said anything. Well, I disagree with that. I tweeted out last night, bad look for the Red Sox tonight and not invite Curt Schilling to be part of the 2004 World Series first pitch group. He lives right down the road.
Right.
So the tweet got liked 781 times. Okay, there's a whole bunch of folks who agree.
Brag.
No. You should see the comments.
Oh, yeah, he is divisive.
He is totally divisive.
Yeah,
there would have been a negative reaction amongst a certain group who would not be able to set aside the politics or Breitbart or anything else.
But people,
they would have seen him and they would have said, hey, he ripped us off in Rhode Island, you know.
He's not going to get a big ovation in Rhode Island, and I understand why. I'm fine with that. But I would have him out there, and I think it's actually, maybe I'm wrong, Dale, I think it's a bigger story that they didn't invite him.
Yeah, it ended up being that.
Yeah, I think so. Rather than
because he's right here. If they had to fly him in from Arizona, you'd say, oh, look, we weren't flying people in.
It's a whole thing. Like, if you're in the area, great. But even still,
if Curtis Liskanic lived down the road,
bring him.
He'd have been out there last night.
Bring him, for heaven's sake. He deserves to be out there. And then it's kind of awkward because you have the guy with the biggest steal in team history is in the other dugout. So he sort of ran out there real quick. You're like, by the way, I like you, but get out of here.
By the way, they did invite him to be a part of that last night, which would have been totally
weird. I don't like that.
In fact, I wonder what his players thought of him running out there and hugging those guys.
Where was little Billy Miller or little Mark Bellhorn? Those guys weren't around?
I guess not.
Doug Minkiewicz? He's like, I'm not bringing the ball.
I'll come back if you want, but the ball's in a safe deposit box.
I don't think he's welcome back.
Minkiewicz?
Because of the ball.
Sure, he's in bad blood there.
He was an electric defensive first baseman.
More bad blood than with Schilling? No, I think
Minkiewicz is...
I think the Schilling relationship is fractured forever. Now, when they had the 10-year anniversary of the World Series team, Schilling was there, but he was just coming off cancer treatment. Remember how gaunt he looked? He had just been treated for cancer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was a certain sympathy factor. Hey, good for you, Curt. Attaboy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you kicked this thing. That wasn't involved last night.
It's amazing.
The Red Sox were going to go,
When you think of the 04 Red Sox and like the great feelings that surrounded that team. And then how does the front office feel about Curt Schilling, Terry Francona, Theo Epstein, like these guys,
Doug Minkiewicz.
Yeah, but sure, Dale. The Mount Rushmore of guys, but like those guys, like you think, oh, this manager, like this is the greatest thing ever, and you know the GM at the time, and maybe the most important starting pitcher they had at least for that season, and all it's fractured. I would say the relationship's there.
Yeah, I even understand the whole idea where, not that I ever think this got to John Henry's desk. Where John Henry would say, you know what, I don't want him. I mean, he's killing me anyway. He doesn't like me. I don't like him. No, we're not going to do it. I don't think he ever got the option of even turning it down.
It's just weird, though. Either you just have, like, just Ortiz or just Pedro.
Which is supposedly how it started.
Just
it was going to be Pedro and Ortiz.
Okay.
They'd be perfect.
But even I would raise my hand and say, what about Manny?
You're obsessed with Manny.
I love Manny.
They were never bringing Manny back.
They're not winning the World Series without Manny Ramirez.
They weren't bringing him back here.
Well, that's a mistake.
He's been suspended
twice. Who cares? I'm not asking him to play. I think he could. I think he would.
He's got some stuff going on here.
You don't think he'd look good in the middle of this lineup? I think he'd be great.
And in a uniform?
No, Manny Ramirez should have been out there. I'm more upset about Manny Ramirez than I am Curt Schilling.
Yeah.
But they both should have been out there. I'm not saying that they should have been.
The Schilling thing was just so weird.
That was weird.
Because he lives here.
Yeah.
He's right over here. Hey, Kurt, can you drive in tonight?
He's like, yes, I can.
He could be gone before the pitch hit the glove.
Been wandering around the park anyway. Who knows?
He might have been. He could
have been.
Yeah. Well, we'll hear what Kurt Schilling had to say about all this.
Oh, boy.
When we come back in just a couple of minutes, 617-779-7937. It's Dale and Keith, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Now more of Dale Arnold and Rich Keith on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
The loyal and selfless knuckleballer, Red Sox Hall of Famer number 49, Tim Wakefield.
Got nothing bad to say about Tim Wakefield, one of my favorite people.
What do they call him? The loyal and what? The loyal and faithful?
The loyal and selfless knuckleballer.
Selfless. Loyal. Oh, no, that's true. He was a reliever. He was a closer. He was a starter.
And he kept signing one-year deals.
He gave up his start.
Listen, I'm not saying he shouldn't have been there.
No, I'm saying the selfless part.
Oh, he was selfless.
He was.
He was absolutely selfless. But do they really need to describe all the guys like that?
Yeah, see,
they all need like an adjective.
Millar was happy and hilarious.
The silly Kevin Millar. Here he comes. Millar.
That is all Dr. Charles.
That's bad.
Dr. Charles sometimes gets a little eloquent
with the
plume.
First baseman, Kevin Millar. That'd be pretty good.
Oh, you can't do that.
The electric and brilliant Hall of Famer, number 45, Pedro Martinez.
How about Hall of Famer, pitcher, Pedro Martinez? Or,
and how about the man who had the steal of the century? No matter what shade of blue he wears, he's forever etched in the hearts of New England. In the visitor's dugout, the manager of the National League champions, welcome back, Dave Roberts.
It's like they guilted him into coming out to give Millar a hug.
Like, guys, I'm all set. I'm all set here.
What? I told you I didn't want to do this. What are you introducing me for?
I have to describe every player.
And at last, and of course, Big Poppy himself.
What?
Number 34, David Ortiz.
They just called him Big Poppy. They didn't describe him.
At last and of course.
At last and of course.
That's another way of saying last but not least.
He should have gone with that.
But Dr. Charles gets a little flowery sometimes.
Where's Manny and Kurt?
The captain and the catcher. Red Sox Hall of Famer number 33, Jason Veritek.
There he is.
The captain and the catcher.
I've never heard him called the captain before.
Well, he is the captain. He was the captain of the team.
I remember that. He wore the C and everything.
Because I thought it was so dumb.
To put the C on there?
On a baseball jersey.
It belongs on a sweater, right, Dale?
It belongs on a sweater. It was always a hockey thing.
It was.
And I don't quite know why they felt they had to.
I don't know why they did that either.
We knew who the captain was.
We were pretty sure.
We didn't need the C.
We had a pretty good idea.
Derek Jeter didn't need to wear the C for us to know.
Also a captain. That's right.
He was the guy.
Yep.
All right, back to the calls with you guys. Let's hit Jerry up in New Hampshire. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Good morning.
So two quick things. One, the Kinsler base running. At first, I felt like, hey, it was a poor decision. And then I thought about how aggressive that base running was. It took a good throw to take to get him out, and it put the Dodgers on notice that we're gonna run aggressively. And it was proven later in the game when Betts was on his toes and a wild pitch happened and he took third. So the Dodgers are on notice. Just wondered what your thoughts were on that.
There is no doubt that was something that they had a game plan coming in when Mookie Betts is stealing second in the top of the first inning of the first game. The tone was being set. And you're right. But there's a difference between aggressive base running. Going to third base on a single to left is...
You don't see it, especially at Fenway left.
Yeah.
They're pretty shallow. And I understand that, you know, aggressiveness has been a big part of their game plan all season long and in the playoffs. So it's worked more than it hasn't. There's definitely that part of it. Also, the Dodgers outfielders have not exactly put on a clinic.
No.
You know, they've looked
like... They have a hard time playing the outfield
out there. They're just very uncomfortable. And that's maybe even a bigger advantage than I had thought. You know, you take a team that never plays at Fenway, and they're probably looking around and like, where do I stand? Like, how about the Yasiel Puig on one of those RBIs? He's standing out in, like, the bullpen. Say, hey, Puig, I know it's a big right field, but you can bring it in a little bit. I think somebody measured it. He was standing like 320 feet away.
When the norm is supposedly like 270 or
something. Yeah, whatever it is. You're like, what are you doing way back there? And so that one, maybe, you know, if Mookie Betts is playing right field, he takes a hit away. But I don't like the argument of, well, you know, kind of, it takes a perfect throw to get him. It's like, major leaguers. They're major leaguers. I mean, you can make that case in high school.
They did nutmeg him, which, now, if you had told him he had to do that.
Yeah, that was, I was surprised by. I don't know if that was the only way to get there, but that's how he decided to get there. Yeah, and making the final out at third, and I know it's a little bit different because the lineup is different, so Vasquez was up next, not Betts. I would have been more upset if Bradley was hitting ninth like normal and Kinsler got thrown out was up. But because it was Vasquez, it wasn't as big of a deal, but still, you never want to see that.
By the way, I did sort of mock it a bit last night. And I know we've made fun of the whole, you know, cards, the little
index
cards.
Oh, my God!
You make a pitching change...
Guys, get new cards!
And you got the bat boy running new cards out to the outfield.
That is so dumb.
I mean, really?
The pockets for these guys should be used for sunflower seeds, maybe their batting gloves.
Maybe a dip if you're into that.
Sure, I mean, I try to, you know, encourage kids not to do that. But things like that, that's what the pockets are for. These guys all have cheat sheets and hit charts.
And when we change pitchers, we got to get you new cards. Hold on, ump! This is not some new cards out to the guys.
This is not America's pastime. It's not. That's not how they play.
I understand that everybody.
Willie Mays was looking at the back of his car, pulling out before he made the catch. He's like, "Oh, let me see. Where should I line up for these guys?"
Here, I'm going to catch this over my shoulder.
So bad.
I understand that the game is different today, and I understand the Red Sox, by the way, use these little index cards as well. We've seen shots of it. I've never seen a bat boy run a new set of cards out to the outfield during a pitching change.
That is weird, isn't it? I mean, now I guess because, you know, Madsen's in, so now you're going to line up differently. I guess you would, and, you know, depending on...
Do you go over this stuff before a series? Do you, have a meeting or something?
I think you should have to memorize it. I think, call me crazy.
Or in a worst-case scenario, look into the dugout and have a coach go, no, over there.
No. You're left.
See, maybe that's what they're trying to avoid is that.
Guys just spinning around like a top in the outfield. Like, I don't know where they're going.
I don't know!
Bumping into each other. Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, baseball was played for roughly 200 years without these index cards. I don't think you need it now. Call me crazy.
Mike's in North Providence. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Yeah, you know, a lot's been made out of price figuring it out, but I think the guy who's really figured it out more than anyone is Kelly.
And you could make the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to, just the pitch selection and, like, a major alteration. He used to throw that knuckle curve as a big arcing pitch. And now he's really tightened it up. It's a much sharper break. I think he controls it better. I think it disguises the pitch better. And they could always tell, okay, that's not the fastball. Now they're kind of in doubt.
How about that little slide step hop thing last night, which completely disrupted timing?
Yeah.
Well, I just looked at, like Muncy, right? He looked at two curveballs in a row because he's all geared up for the fastball. Then when the fastball comes, he just swings at that thing that's way out of the zone because it's coming out of the same plane. And he reversed it on Grandal, where Grandal had watched Muncy chase the high fastball, so he has them all set up and just drops the change in there.
Right.
These guys are all in between. It reminds me of Koji, where they just can't recognize the pitch. Because when he's throwing 100, that 86-mile-an-hour curveball and the 88-mile-an-hour change are pretty devastating.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're seeing the good Joe Kelly right now. And during the regular season, there was, you know, a month of that. And then there was also a month of terrible Joe Kelly.
I like that if you're going to have a month of the good Joe Kelly, let it happen now.
October.
Don't save it for December.
No, October makes sense. He's the only member of the Red Sox pitching staff that has not walked a batter in the postseason. Every guy that has pitched for him has walked at least one guy. Joe Kelly, 7 1/3. He's giving up one run on 4 hits, 7 strikeouts, no walks. And when you go back to some of the bad outings that Joe Kelly has had, he's just walking the farm. And you're saying, yeah, that's great. You can throw 100, but if you can't throw strikes,
you don't know where it's going.
Right. And so he is completely locked in right now.
I mean, he's not the only one, but
no, most of
his locked in does seem to be even more dramatic.
Yeah. Evaldi, Barnes, Kelly, and Brazier all have ERAs below 2. And that's pretty impressive.
And the eighth inning for the Red Sox, because you've used starters in some occasions as well, has been...
Oh, they've given up...
They're untouchable.
I think they've given up, one run in the eighth so far? And it's a lot of it is starters, but it's just been pretty remarkable.
617-779-7937. Luke's up in Maine. Hey, Luke.
Hey, guys. First of all, I was at the game last night, and I have honestly never felt bad for opposing.
So happy they're going home to 80.
Yeah, that's tough.
They were demoralized, man, walking out of that stadium. But the reason I called is because of the Schilling talk, and it doesn't really get talked a lot about because of, you know, his politics and the video game company. But he and the front office of the Red Sox had a big kerfuffle his last season because he was negotiating a contract, a one-year contract with them. He wasn't really forthright about his injury. And they ended up signing him for that last year, and he never even played for them.
Yeah, he got like a free, what was it, $8 million, I think it was?
Yeah, he got
he didn't do anything.
$8 million off of them. And they, you know, at that time, it was kind of a controversial thing. And he was on your station a few times trying to defend how it went down, but it was kind of sleazy. And a lot of people don't talk about it, that being one of the reasons why there was a falling out.
Well, and I think
sure,
because
add,
when,
yeah,
they,
add it to the list.
When they had the 10th reunion for the 2004 team, he was there.
Right.
And he was out on the field with his jersey on like everybody else. But I do think that was also in the aftermath of cancer treatment. And,
right,
you know, there was a certain, hey, good for you, Kirk. You know, we're really rooting for you here. You're right. There have always been tensions between this ownership group and Curt Schilling. In fact, Jason, we've got a little Curt Schilling here, right?
He takes the old Periscope a few times. Down Periscope with Kelsey Grammer.
Terrible movie. So what he does, he pops on Twitter using Periscope. We think he might be on some other service that you have to pay for.
The Opal app?
No.
Because people call in, but you can't hear them on the Periscope, but you must be able to on some other platform.
Wait, oh, okay.
No, maybe not.
Imagine if we took callers where only we could
like
hear the callers.
It's sort of like when... It's
the
like
listener
when,
would be very loud.
Actually, they might like that.
It's like when we go live to a Belichick press conference and you can't hear anybody in the audience ask the questions and then you hear him answer them. It's
so how
like that.
How long did he talk today?
He's still going.
Holy mackerel.
He goes on for hours. There's a lot of political stuff, but we have our crack staff trying to grab some of the good stuff. So
some that isn't political, if we can, you know.
Well, we were going to get into that. We'll do that in the noon hour.
That'll be the whole noon hour. Maybe
noon 30.
Noon 30, we can do that.
So anyway, so he started off real hot. This is what he had to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Would you wake him up?
Oh, goodness.
Wow.
I mean, you can start whenever you want, you know.
You don't have to turn that thing on until you're ready.
It's kind of up to you. We should start our show like this.
He's really fired up about the Red Sox now, it sounds like.
Well, it was a late night, but not that late. Game was over well before midnight.
Does this just go on and on and on?
He's like a bear waking up from hibernation. Like, what is that?
So eventually he got to the point where someone had called in that we couldn't hear.
And there's a number to call in? I don't get this.
We don't see it. All you see is his face with
so
a bad
where,
camera.
Is he ever giving out a number? How do people have the number? How do we know he's not making up the calls?
Well, he goes mute for a few minutes, and then he responds to people.
So we do this. We go, Joe from East Boston, you're next on Sports Radio. Yeah. No, I can't do that. Yeah, sure.
can you please repeat the questions? We can't hear any of them. What does he say? So does he monologue a little bit, or he goes right to the calls?
No, he just yawns.
He just yawns. Little stretches.
Scratching himself.
Yeah, it's all on camera, too.
Only vocal exercises?
Only thing that we got out of this that he... So somebody said, what are your thoughts on like the Boston fans and not being there
Great
at
question.
Fenway Park?
Okay.
We're assuming this because this was his answer.
We don't know for
we don't
sure.
Know.
But okay.
I've seen it firsthand. And by the way, I can tell you this. I've watched this town run Tim Thomas out after the 2011 Stanley Cup run, which he basically carried the Bruins on his back. He was booed out of town and ran out of town because he didn't go to the White House. So none of this stuff surprises me.
Now, to be fair, now there is some truth to that.
Oh, no, there absolutely.
But, Dale, wouldn't you also say Tim Thomas kind of
ran himself out?
A little bit. Like he kind of took off.
He was complicit.
Went to a bunker and, you know, that kind of thing.
In Wyoming or something.
Yeah,
I forget
Colorado
where he is.
Maybe or yeah, whatever it was.
Like
yeah.
So based on what he wrote on Facebook today, at least what he wants you to believe is, I wouldn't have gone anyway.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gone. So he's claiming, and he might be right, but he's claiming it's all political, right? That's why he's saying, so Tim Thomas, it happened to Tim Thomas, and it's happening to me.
And he's saying, like, look at the way the fans kind of ate him up after he decided
Got
not
it.
To go to the White House.
Okay.
Then he had this follow-up, too.
Okay.
That was that.
I'm so sleepy. The game was so late last night. I'm very tired. But I got to do this for the fans. Gotta do this for the fans. We're periscoping till I have to take my nap. Coming up soon, gotta take another nap. Grab some snacks and take a nap.
Could have a coffee, but that would wake me up.
Not to be crass, Jason, but is he on the toilet?
To be honest, you can't tell.
Yeah, okay, he may be. So that's still in play.
No.
That's still in play.
There, you can see a little bit of the background of the room. Yeah. It'll be a really unique bathroom situation.
I mean, it sounds like a guy who wants to take advantage of every second he's awake. You know, that's what he's there to do.
You can tell he really carpe diem when it comes to
the day.
Do you know what this is?
What's this?
This was the Mike Francesa app before Mike Francesa had it.
Yeah, he out-Francesa'd Francesa with this.
He was ahead of the Francesa curve on this.
That's absolutely true. Is there a Curt Schilling app that I could download?
I think you're just hurting.
Is this what it is?
I think
it is. It's a real tired day.
We actually just got some new audio.
I'm really tired.
This isn't yawning.
I'm so tired.
I don't know what happened last night, but I was in front of my computer and I went by Twitter and I saw I was trending and I was like, oh no, what did I do? I was trying to think back to my Facebook and my last tweets. I'm thinking, what did I say? And I clicked on it and realized what it was about, and it was about all this. Not surprising. I when you look at what they did around my family and to my family when we parted ways in 2008, I'll never ever forgive them for it anyway. But that's who they are, and it doesn't surprise me.
So 2008, and I'm all for holding grudges, you know that. He's holding a grudge from 2008.
It's a healthy thing in the Keefe household.
Yeah, sure. It means you're passionate about something.
Exactly.
But 2014 he came back, right?
2014. He was here for that reunion.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So
but then he got
He
ran a little hot after that.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did. He had a lot. I like how he was surprised he was trending, because he's been trending before.
Yeah, and there's been and a he's few probably times. Always a little nervous because he's going, uh-oh.
Yeah.
I went by Twitter and I saw I was trending. And
he
was like,
saw
oh,
Mutt.
No.
He saw
him
Mutt.
And Mutt are tight, I think.
He saw Mutt. That's not one of Mutt's tweets.
Twitter and I saw Mutt. I was trending and I was like, oh, no.
Oh, no. This could be a dangerous thing.
Six
went
one.
By Twitter and I saw I was trending
I saw
and
Mutt.
I was like, oh.
I saw Mutt and said, uh-oh.
Oh, I'm so tired. Sleepy.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We'll talk to Peter King at the bottom of the hour, as we normally do on Thursdays. Probably be more baseball than football,
baseball,
the way things are going. As we're building to a fever pitch for the big Buffalo tilt. What's the nickname of the Buffalo team? I forget. I mean, whoever they are, that team from Buffalo.
The Bison.
617-779-7937. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Oh, goodness.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.